In the Middle East, Israel and the U.S. continue striking targets across Iran as Iran widens its retaliatory strikes in the region.
The U.S. military central command says it has destroyed Iran's navy. And in Iran, preparations for the funeral of Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, who was killed by Israel, are set to begin tonight. The widespread fighting continues to disrupt air travel and shipping channels in the region.
For more, we go to NPR's Carrie Kahn in Tel Aviv. Carrie, Israel and the U.S. have continued their air campaign today. What's the situation now?
The airstrikes continue in cities throughout Iran. On state TV, you see ruins of buildings in the capital, Tehran. Many of the targets are symbols of the regime, including hits on besieged command centers. And that's Iran's state-run paramilitary force that was crucial to the protester crackdown earlier this year. As you said, the U.S. military CENTCOM said today that it has obliterated Iran's navy. And they say not a single Iranian ship is left in the waterways off Iran. And joint U.S. and Israeli military strikes are focusing, too, on western Iran's Kurdish areas. Those are longtime anti-regime strongholds. According to Iran's Red Crescent Society, the death toll there is near 800, and at least 175 of those killed were from the bombing of an elementary school at the start of the war.
And all this is happening as Iran is planning a state funeral and a succession process for a new supreme leader.
Yes, Iranian officials have announced 3 days of mourning for the supreme leader who Israel killed last weekend. His body will lie in state, and officials have called for mourners to come out in large numbers. The funeral is set to begin this evening. A new assembly of experts and another committee are convening to pick the next leader, and that's according to state media. Yesterday, Israel struck a site in the city of Qom where the assembly was set to be convening. They were not there at the time, though, and that's according to Iran's Fars state news agency. In a statement today, Israel's defense minister, Israel Katz, reiterated his country's pledges to kill any new leader picked who threatens to destroy Israel. He said today that person, quote, will be an unequivocal target for elimination.
And this is all spreading into Gulf states. I mean, not just only Israel. I mean, where is all this headed possibly?
Yes, we've seen Iranian drones and missiles hit targets in the Gulf. Yesterday, the U.S. embassy in Saudi Arabia was hit, and a drone sparked a fire at the U.S. consulate in Dubai last night. The U.S. State Department is advising U.S. citizens to leave more than a dozen countries throughout the Middle East. The Strait of Hormuz is still mostly closed to traffic. Israel is pounding sites, too, in Lebanon after Hezbollah fired at Israel. Yesterday, Hezbollah was able to shoot missiles into central Israel. Israel's defense minister says there is a plan ready for further advance of troops into Lebanon. While many fronts in the war appear to be opening up, we've actually seen a number of missiles and drones coming into Israel and the Gulf drop significantly in the last 24 hours. And so far, Gulf states have not retaliated. But for how long that will last, that's still an unknown, eh?
That's NPR's Carrie Kahn in Tel Aviv. Carrie, thank you.
You're welcome.
We also have new details from the Pentagon about 4 of the 6 soldiers killed by an Iranian drone strike in Kuwait on Sunday. They were all in the Army Reserve. Sergeant First Class Noah L. Tejans, 42 years old, of Bellevue, Nebraska. 39-year-old Sergeant First Class Nicole M. Amor of White Bear Lake, Minnesota.
Captain Cody A. Cork, 35 years old, of Winter Haven, Florida. And 20-year-old Sergeant Declan J. Cody of West Des Moines, Iowa. The names of 2 other service members killed have not yet been made public.
President Trump answered questions publicly for the first time Tuesday about the ongoing U.S. strikes in Iran.
He claimed that if the U.S. had not attacked Iran, there would have been a nuclear war.
But if we didn't do what we're doing right now, you would have had a nuclear war and they would have taken out many countries.
It's one of several shifting answers the president has given on why the U.S. attacked Iran in the first place and what his ultimate goals are.
NPR White House correspondent Deepa Shivaram joins us now to discuss. So we've heard differing takes from the president, also from the Secretary of State over the last few days. So what's the latest that the White House is saying for why the U.S. struck Iran over the weekend?
Yeah, you know, there has been a lot of mixed messaging here, A. And just to put this into context for a second, Trump said on Monday that the U.S. attacked Iran because Iran was developing nuclear capabilities and missile capabilities that would soon be able to hit the U.S., though previous government analysis says those capabilities were not imminent. But that seemed to counter what his Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, said, that the U.S. believed Israel was going to strike Iran and Iranian counterattacks would have put the U.S. at risk. So the U.S. struck Iran first.
Yeah, so two different answers there. And then yesterday from Trump, another different answer.
Right. So Trump was asked yesterday if Israel forced the U.S.'s hand. And the president said he might have forced Israel in attacking Iran after negotiations fizzled.
You see, we were having negotiations with these lunatics, and it was my opinion that they were going to attack first. They were going to attack. If we didn't do it, they were going to attack first. I felt strongly about that.
And I want to emphasize there that Trump didn't cite any U.S. intelligence that Iran was going to strike. He said it was his opinion and that he felt Iran was going to strike the U.S. or Israel.
What do people think about this non-alignment on answers from the administration?
I mean, the public polling that's been conducted so far shows that Americans are not in favor of this war. And a majority think the U.S. will now be in a long-term conflict with Iran. In response to all this, the White House in the last few days has been trying to realign their messaging here. Senior administration officials tried to explain in detail yesterday why the negotiations with Iran were breaking down. Later today, the Pentagon and the White House are holding more briefings. But 5 days into this war, I mean, questions remain. And a big one is timeline and what's the end goal? Trump has said that he expects these strikes to last several more weeks, but what will define success here for the Trump administration? And what does the U.S. want for Iran after these strikes end?
And I guess one more thing a lot of people are worried about is the price of oil. That's aside from just the horrible things that happen when there are missile strikes. I mean, has the president addressed that at all?
Yeah, I mean, Trump said yesterday that oil prices might be high for a, quote, little while, but he said as soon as this conflict ends, and again, didn't provide a timeline there, he said oil prices would be even lower than before. No real clarity on how the president plans to facilitate that. I will say the global price of crude oil has risen since this war began. And of course, you know, to put this into domestic context, it comes as Americans at home are still really worried about affordability and the economy. There's a midterm election coming up later this year. Trump seems to have an eye on oil prices, though, because yesterday he announced efforts to try and guarantee the safety of oil tankers traveling through the Strait of Hormuz that can pass to deliver the 20% of the world's oil that comes through that route.
All right, that's NPR's Deepa Shivaram. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Democrats in Texas have chosen the candidate they want to try and flip a U.S. Senate seat from Republicans, and that candidate is James Tallarico.
He beat Congressman Jasmine Crockett. Texas, North Carolina, and Arkansas all held primaries Tuesday, the first of the 2026 midterms.
NPR senior political editor and correspondent Domenico Montanaro was up late watching the returns and is up early with us. So we'll get to the Lone Star State in a second. Let's start with the Tar Heel State, North Carolina. What do we learn there?
Well, the Senate race there is now set. You know, it's Republican Michael Whatley, who's a former Trump Republican National Committee chairman, and he's going against Democrat Roy Cooper, who's the state's former governor. Cooper getting in the race was seen as a really big get for Democrats. Last night, he focused his message on prices, but also said this.
I'll be a strong, independent senator who will work with this president when I can and stand up to him when the people need me to. I will always, always put the people of North Carolina first, before politics, before party.
So work with the president when he can, he said, and stand up to him when necessary. And you didn't hear him mention he's a Democrat. That's a very fine line Cooper's trying to walk in trying to flip this seat.
All right, now deep in the heart of Texas, what do we learn from those results?
Yeah, you mentioned that Tallarico won. This was a really competitive primary, though he wound up winning by about 7 points as of this taping. Here he was last night.
This is a people-powered movement to take on this broken, corrupt political system. This is truly a campaign of, by, and for the people.
I mean, Democrats really hope that this populist message and a more measured tone from Tallarico can help them win. But this is Texas. It won't be easy. No Democrat has won statewide since 1994.
Yeah, and for the Republicans in this race in Texas, that thing's going to last a little bit longer. So tell us why that is.
Yeah, no one broke 50%, so it's going to a May 26th runoff. So Texas, get ready for more money and more nasty attacks between incumbent Senator John Cornyn and State Attorney General Ken Paxton. And there's one person who's going to be key above all else in this race. Neither of them is in the race. See if you can make out who it is. And here's Cornyn.
The final 2 years of President Trump's agenda hangs in the balance. I'm proud to have supported President Trump and worked with him to help him achieve his goals in the Congress.
Okay, and here's Paxton talking about Cornyn.
For too long, he stabbed our president in the back by trying to derail his presidential campaigns and supporting the Democrats' lawfare against the president.
Get the drift here? You know, either candidate would love President Trump's backing, but he has not endorsed anyone, saying he liked all the candidates in this primary.
You think eventually Trump will get involved?
You know, I think it's possible that he does wind up putting his finger on the scale here. I mean, this has been a bitter and nasty primary. $70 million poured in to help John Cornyn. Another $100 million could be spent in the next 12 weeks of this runoff. So if you're Trump looking down the line here, do you really want to spend $100 million, the party to do so, on a Senate primary in a state you should win? Or maybe spend that money on some of those frontline swing House races?
NPR senior political editor and correspondent Domenico Montanaro, thanks a lot.
You got it.